Today on the show, we take a look at hard choices, big decisions, and the weight of responsibility. Welcome to Lore Party, the podcast that explores the stories, characters, and universes of our favorite video games. I'm Connor.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Jaden.
And we have a barn burner for you folks this time around. We're capping off the season. You know, it's the last episode. Let's go hard. And we're very pleased to introduce some very special guests on this episode. We've got Ken and Eric in the cut from Normandy FM. How you guys doing?
Doing all right. You feeling good, Ken? You ready for this?
I'm always happy to be a Mass Effect podcast again. So
it's about time. We've been away too long from it.
That's right. You guys, obviously, Mass Effect was your bread and butter for a while, but you got away from it into other topics for a while. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we started out as Normandy FM, which is really just a podcast for Ken and I to talk about a game that we both love, but somehow had never really gone full in on the podcasting thing for. It was actually an N7 day that Ken basically called my bluff on, talked forever and was like, well, why don't we just podcast about it? And at the time I was like, yeah, sure. Yeah, whatever, Ken. Let's see you do it. And well, here we are years later. I've learned never to doubt this man. So we started out, we did Mass Effect and that went really well. So we went into Dragon Age and that did really well, and into Jade Empire. And we were like, okay, that's enough BioWare for now. So, yeah, then we picked up Last of Us and now we're in Final Fantasy, which is,
nice.
You know, we're just going all over the place. We already announced that our next season's Cyberpunk 2. So, you know, we're really just opening cans of worms everywhere we go.
Yeah, quite a journey you've been on. I got to ask though, when are your Anthem episodes starting?
You know, that's gonna be backer goal. If we get one backer who backs us at like the $1 million mark, then yeah, I'll sit down and play through Anthem.
Yeah,
they will start
back us enough to where we can quit our jobs.
Exactly.
We'll there you go. Yeah. You'll start doing it as soon as EA starts caring about that game.
Oh boy.
That's already
so
EA already took that thing behind the shed. Ain't nobody caring about that anymore.
Exactly.
I bought that game at launch. I paid full price for that game. I'm
me too.
I know a guy who bought the season pass.
Yikes.
That's worse than buying the game, like, I think.
I didn't know they had a season pass, dude. And he was like, the GameStop guy said they did. Ooh. Strike one and two on that statement. Oof. There.
But no, that's great. I mean, we're all happy to have you guys here. We're also happy to give you opportunity to go back to the Milky Way, go back to the relay, you know, and take it back a little bit. And you know, we're going big. We're thinking big this time with the galaxy brain topic. You know, just let's look at the entire trilogy this time is what we're thinking. So today we're discussing the big decisions of the Mass Effect trilogy, the things that Commander Shepard has been responsible for over the years, and we want to take a closer look at what things like that do to a person when you're responsible for the, you know, the lives of billions, literally billions. How do you stay sane through a career like that, a military career like that? It's just, I don't think anyone, I haven't heard it discussed. You know, we need to break the stigma of the mental trauma that video game characters suffer. So let's break the stigma here.
Well, now don't forget, so the biggest thing is, honestly, most of the stuff here would break probably anybody, but Shepard not only has plot armor for Shepard's like physical existence, but also Shepard has psyche plot armor. So just keep that in mind. That's obviously your main character can't, you know, lose their shit in the first game and never show up again. But that's just keep this in mind that there is a lot of plot armor here for Shepard's psyche.
Do you guys think him dying in the second game like reset his mental clock?
That's a
Oh, you get like
just drained the sanity, just drained the sanity meter back to zero. He was like, "Oh,
well." Like in the Shepherd's thinking, like, "Oh, it could always be worse. I could be dead, but you know, I've been there." And let me tell you, oh.
As Shepherd is floating out in space, they're thinking back on that time that they're like, "Well, it could be worse. The Normandy could blow."
That's true. Yeah, like, things like that will really give you perspective, I guess. You know, that really grounds you when your ship is blown up around you and you have to be rebuilt like the $6 trillion man. It's yeah, it's perspective. Before we get really deep into it, some quick housekeeping. Just so you all know, we love to hear from our listeners. You can email us anytime at lorepartypodcast@gmail.com with your thoughts and episode ideas. Also, we stream occasionally on Twitch. Be sure to follow us on twitch.tv/lore_party. And of course, you can connect with us on Instagram and Twitter @lore_party. So let's get into it. I think we have kind of three big chunks of the discussion. We're going to start with the classic, the big keystone moment in Mass Effect 1. And I'm talking, of course, about the mission to Vermeer. I think that the term, the word Vermeer sends some chills up the spine for almost anybody who's played that game. But the quick background is, I mean, the team, Shepard and the team, go there to stop Saren, the bad guy, from breeding an army of Krogans. But this quickly spirals out of control and leads to kind of a standoff between Erdnot Rex, the Krogan member of the party, and the rest of the team. It could turn potentially deadly. Depending on your playthrough, it gets particularly deadly.
Mm-hmm. it's really this moment that I think there are a lot of choice moments in Mass Effect that you can look at and they stick out. The Rachni are a big one and things like that. But I think when it comes to choices that end up defining your character, and that's really what Mass Effect is at the end of the day, is it's not just any old Shepard. It's not just, you know, a character in the way that Kratos is a character, or a character in the way that like Aloy from Horizon is a character, but it's a character that you make. And it's a different kind of character that you then have to like engage with, is that this is an embodiment of your actions. And you kind of see it come to fruition there a little bit with Vermeer, because the game doesn't just present you a choice that you have to make an A or B choice on. It's it almost kind of challenges you to be like, back up why you think a choice would be a good decision. And that's one of the reasons it's really stuck with me through all the years, is it's not often a game always presents you with a choice and it says, like, back it up. Like, you know, Rex is pulling a gun on you and saying, my people have been dying from the Genophage for ages for a thing that our ancestors did. We had nothing to do with. And you want to go in there and blow up our only shot at a save. Now, you know that having Saren make an army of Krogan is going to be a bad thing. But you have to be able to then explain it to Rex, or have earned Rex's trust to get through that. Otherwise, that's not going to work out well. So, Ken, I know you got thoughts on this stuff as well, too. But that's one of the stickouts to me, is that this is a moment where you got to back up, you know, what you believe, rather than just saying, like, this is what I'm going to do. This is you saying, this is what I believe.
Mm-hmm. I think it also sticks out as a moment, like, you know, again, in a game full of choice-based moments, like, it is one of the only instances in the game. It's like something that you have to do and you don't get to just simply cleanly walk away from. Like something with the Rachni or Pharos happens and, you know, you get to leave that planet behind, but after you get back to your ship on Vermeer, you're going to have one, maybe two empty chairs for the rest of the game. And to that, you know, to that end, like, that is going to be, like, it is an expression of your values in this game and how your vision of Shepard plays out in a world where their choices actually do have, like, an impact. And something that you have to, like, have, the, you know, that weight on your shoulders, you know, not even just in Mass Effect 1, like, throughout the trilogy, like, those are things that you have to live with. And as these, you know, expressions of who you were in those moments and why you did the things that you did.
Yeah, these kinds of decisions, it's not just, you know, picking what color clothing from the vendor mm-hmm. and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Like, these are decisions that, off the bat, they are life and death decisions. They are very much impactful, not just, you know, for the character that you're speaking to, but just, for instance, the Krogan situation, like, that is impactful to an entire mm-hmm. species, and it could potentially, you know, save their species in a way. And so you not just have to thought process the whole thing with that person, but also the whole situation as a whole. And so when you talk to Rex about this, you really have to like you said, gain Rex's trust, because you can just say anything, you know, in a game sometimes, and it's just part of the story, you know, in air quotes. Whereas this is like, this is your decision, and this is impacting this character's life, what this character has gone through their entire life, and you're making a massive decision for them almost based on, you know, the three or four options given. Whatever you choose not only makes or breaks the character, but it could make or break the universe, the species, you know, all, there's so much more than just, you know, who am I going to take with me on this planet, yeah, kind of situation.
And I think it's particularly difficult for a leader, you know, an officer in Shepard and Commander Shepard's position, because this isn't a clear cut, you know, this is my enemy, this is a threat, I need to deal with it in a direct, you know, practical manner. This is an ally who I'm at an impasse with. And whatever decision you make, like we've established, that has permanent consequences. And, you know, we'll probably touch on this again later, but a theme here is that when you're in a position of command, you have to get used to the idea of people you're responsible for possibly dying in the line of duty. And I think a commander in Shepard's position is going to know that, but like when you're directly, literally, maybe responsible for that person dying when they really didn't have to, arguably, that's not just something you're going to walk off and just go to, you know, sleep just fine that night. You know what I mean? So, but before we move on, any final thoughts on the Rex standoff? Because some other shit goes down on Vermeier, as well, as we know.
As someone who before I played Mass Effect 1, Mass Effect 2 had come out, so I played that first, and then I played 3, and then I went back and played 1.
Wow.
So I was someone who went, oh, there's a character named Rex in this game?
Oh,
because
no,
the canon
right.
ending is that he does not survive.
Wow. That's crazy.
And so I played through the, you know, I went back and I was like, oh, I'm going to see if I can get this guy to live. And it was kind of difficult to get him to stick around there, because that guy wanted to die, it seemed like.
Well, he was a bullet magnet, yeah.
It's something that I think when BioWare does this, it's one of their, like, the best clubs they have in their bag is, like, this idea that you have a party member that disagrees with you. And, you know, I think in a lot of games, even BioWare games themselves can sometimes be guilty of this idea that you become this character that gets to just make the decisions for everybody and say, like, I'm going to make a sweeping change to this entire universe. And because I'm the protagonist of video game, it gets to happen. And I think when BioWare pulls that club out and says, nah, you are going to have opposition, like, you don't get to just be unchallenged through this. You've got to reason your way through it, or you can get what you want, but it's going to cost you something. And I think that's a really cool thing to have, because I think, A, it is more realistic, you know, in real life, you are going to have people who are going to disagree with you, and you're going to have to be able to stand your ground and prove yourself to them, or else you're going to be at opposition with each other. And in the situations that they're in, opposition with each other is not just we're unfollowing each other on social media. This is life and death. And I think it also works well because it then informs your character. You know, this is your Shepard. And I think whenever a game can kind of push you and ask you, what do you believe and why do you believe it? That's then informing the way that you create your own character and feel a sense of place and self in this world. And so I think it's one of the cooler moments in Mass Effect 1, because it is them leaning into this stuff and having these characters that are going to kind of push you and say, no, you're going to be more actively involved in the story than just hitting option A or option B.
So that's the thing. These options they give you are not just like a life decision where it's like, I have the money for the car. Should I buy the car or should I not buy the car? It's not like so A or B. There are consequences and a lot more. All of these decisions that we talk about today, there are way more story elements that are impacted, and kind of like a butterfly effect, if you will, but also just things you have to take into account when making these decisions. Because, for instance, with Rex, you can, I was able to save this guy, and I loved him so much. I was like, I'm gonna be your bro, I'm gonna do what I can for your people, I got you, trust me. And he was like, all right, fine. And I was able to keep him through all three games. But again, with the canon, like, that's normally, that's not the right decision. I don't want to say right decision. That's not the fate decision, if you will, of fate, if you believe in that kind of thing. So it's, if you look at that, look at all the things that happen if Rex doesn't survive, how the whole entire Krogan story is impacted. And not just the Krogan story, there's other people too, like Morden and stuff. Like, there's a lot more that's impacted that you also, when playing those decisions, they kind of hint at it with the character's explanation of why they're opposing you and that kind of thing. Like, Rex just didn't say, you know, it's my way or the highway. It's Rex explains himself and says, these are things that I'm thinking about as to why I don't agree with you. And I think that having all that information really adds and weighs heavily to your decision. So I feel like the way they handled this specific situation really emphasizes, like, how many things are impacted.
Well, and to give you a great example of another game that doing the opposite of this is Fallout 4. If any of you ever played that,
yeah.
The last DLC, you know, you get to take control of the Raider group, and you know, you get to lead the Raiders on an attack on the settlements. But you made those settlements. Mm. Literally, you're attacking your own stuff. So, Preston Garvey, he doesn't even get he gets mad at you, but he doesn't attack you. He's just like, that was mean of you, General. Like the old Fallout games, that would have been fight on sight,
right,
you know? But
right.
He's just like, hey, man, we made something nice and you wrecked it.
Cut it out.
By the way, the settlement needs your help.
Fight
me, you fool.
Too true.
I know they need help. I'm the one causing the danger. Yeah. I am the danger, Skylar.
Yeah, we turned this into, like, reasons why Fallout, specifically Fallout 4, has problems be along with the podcast, but... I like the point about canonicity too, because that's kind of like the shadow that hangs over Mass Effect in a way, because the whole series is supposed to be about having your playthrough. And if you play 1 through 3 in, you know, the order as intended in sequential order, then you can create kind of your own universe. But over the years, you know, for whatever reason, as people kind of got onto them, I always like to laugh that there were people who might have picked up Mass Effect 3 on the Wii U, having never played those games and having no ability to play those games because the first two were not on Wii U. And they're ending up with this very strange play file that they're having to work with. But I know, Ken, you're like big into canonicity and all that, but it is a thing that you have to like contend with as the games go on and this idea that they create.
The best part about those games is that in order to establish the deep and rich backstory of the first two games that you definitely didn't play, they made you do like
comics,
like a comic and like choose your own adventure thing. And it's like, if you're like I don't know who the hell Tali is, sure, she came with me.
I can't imagine getting to Mass Effect 3 and not knowing who Rex and Tali are. It's just
no, exactly.
Wild to me.
Well, it's like we're gonna leave Caleb and Rex are dead. It's like, who were those? I don't know.
Yeah. Speaking of leaving people and people dying, later in that, I know we got a little away from it, but later in that same mission, that was a hell of a day for Shepard. That's a packed day. Not only do you have to talk Rex down off a cliff and, you know, at gunpoint. But later on, both Caden and Ashley, two of your squad mates, they're both pinned down and in mortal peril, and you can only go back and rescue one of them. So it's literally a gun to your head, A and B, who lives, who dies. And that's, we've touched on before, again, this idea of the weight of responsibility and the burden of command, you know, having to spend lives and not just waste them. It's like, yeah, when you send people into combat, they may die, but when you are literally given the choice of who lives and who dies, that's an entirely different issue. Like, how do you bear that? How do you walk away from that? It's I guess there's always the mental plot armor of Shepard, but I think we do see them have, you know, a process of grief afterwards. Like, if for me in my playthrough, I left Caden behind. I kept Ashley, and afterwards, there's conversations you can have where Shepard's like, I'll miss Caden. He was a good crewmate, and yada yada. So it's kind of like you can tell your character, even though they are, they're the protagonists, so they're gonna function. They're gonna be okay one way or another, but they're still dealing with this loss somehow. And it's kind of like, how do you just kind of accept your decision and move on? Is it that simple? You know, what do you do?
I think one of the things that helps is that when we make these decisions, they're brought up to remind us. And when it comes, so I took Caden with me, and Ashley was my decision. And I just remember continuously being brought, it just reminded, it keeps getting brought up. not just obviously this decision, but all these decisions, the massive decisions, the mass affecting decisions, brought up a lot. And they're brought up a lot throughout all the games. And you're continuously reminded of, you know, that one thing you had to do at that one time. And so it's not like, you know, now it's not just a A and B decision and just forget it. It's also now a decision that you are going to be reminded of. And, you know, I think that plays a role in my decision making as a player. I mean, it does. Of course, it's going to play a role in Shepard's psyche, but like my psyche, like I'm going to remember those Batarians. I'm going to remember, you know, what I did with the council. I'm going to know, like, if I let the council live and I was reminded by them, like, you know, you let us live. And then they still, you know, kind of screwed me over a couple times. And I'm like, but if I chose not to let them live, I wouldn't hear the end of it. Like, it would be completely true. Like, well, you killed the council. It's like, it's just these decisions are always continuously being thrown back in my face. And it affects how I'm going to make decisions later on.
Mm. I think with this decision specifically, like it, I think even more so than the Rex stuff does, I think it more kind of sets the foundation of like what is the consequence of existing in the Mass Effect universe and like being a player of these games. I think it more embodies that probably than anything that comes, I think, of the first two games, at least, like three, you know, we'll get to. But, you know, this idea that like you will not be able to get out of everything unscathed, and it kind of has to, you know, it comes down to like why you do what you do, why you, like, what reasoning you have to, sometimes it kind of goes outside the scope of like the tools the game gives you as a player to like express within the universe. But it's kind of like, what do you have like the strength to bear? Like, what is the weight that you're willing to carry as you're going through? And I think when we get into like how it affects, you know, the player character of Shepard, like, I think it is like, you know, we can have kind of like broad generalizations about like, you know, being in command and grieving just generally. But I think like when you are creating this character like Shepard that has, that is malleable, that is, you know, this modular thing that everyone kind of like, nobody talks about Shepard in the same way, I don't think. Like, for me, like, you know, if you've never listened to a podcast or read anything I've ever written, Mass Effect through the trilogy is like this really angsty love story between Shepard and Kaden for me. So like, there's a very specific selfish reason why I pick Kaden in Vermeer. And like, you know, it plays into like, a, you know, a larger story that I'm writing in my head about like how Shepard as a character like realizes at this point, like the Vermeer section broadly, like, he is letting his emotions and get in, you know, entangled into his decision making as commander. And, you know, Kaden, you know, in spite of like, you know, everything else that the relationship is going to be by the end, Kaden is a reminder of like when he did that, like when he let that stuff get in the way of like why he did things. And like, so I think, like I said, like it kind of goes beyond, I guess it's on the player to kind of like fill in those gaps that the game doesn't let you outwardly express, because, you know, I can't go up to Kaden and be like, I saved you because I love you. I have to, like, when he asked, like, why me? And it was just like, I made the decision. Like, we're all just going to have to live with it. I don't, like, want to even talk about it. And I think that's, yeah, and we'll, again, this is get to a broader topic that we're going to talk about when we get to Mass Effect 2. But I think just, like, being willing to live with the fact that you made a decision and it's not always going to be kind of, it's not going to be pretty. It's not going to be justified to you by the game itself. And it's just something like you have to internalize. I guess why Vermeier sticks out to so many people, and why, you know, it maybe doesn't jive with some people that don't like that they weren't able to get this perfect ending, this, you know, this thing where they did not have to face any consequences because they didn't, like, they did enough side quests that they got to get out with their entire crew without any running into issues. So
it's funny that I was having a similar conversation recently about a game that I really liked called Fire Emblem Three Houses. And someone was telling me that they didn't like it because they're like, oh, you know, I always had to make a choice. I just want to recruit everybody to my team and everybody be happy. And I was like, that ain't how it works. Like, that's not how it goes. And yeah. And I think, you know, I don't think Mass Effect is doing it just to like knock your lunch tray over and be like, that's not real life, kid. You know, I think it's doing it because it is a reality of the life that Shepard and the rest of these characters lead, is that they're going into these situations where it is life and death on the line, and BioWare is not necessarily pulling punches with that idea. They are going to put their money where their mouth is in terms of, yes, there are going to be character lives at risk when you do things. And Vermeier is them doing that twice over, you know?
Yeah.
And as far as this stuff goes specifically with Ashley and Caden, you know, I did a run. I don't think I finished a Mass Effect 3 playthrough of this, but I know I did Mass Effect 1 and 2 of having romanced Ashley. And there's some really interesting dialogue that you can run into where you are kind of having to cope with the idea that maybe Shepard saved Ash because Shepard cared about somebody, and maybe that was the wrong reason to make that choice in that situation. And I think that's an interesting thing that the games kind of brush up against. And granted, I don't know if they carry that over into 3 or not, because I did not want to play all the way through that romancing Ashley. I had other ideas and plans in mind. But it was a cool thing to see not just, you know, this interesting, tough choice and, you know, no true ending route out, no third option that BioWare themselves pull sometimes, you know, that magical everybody's happy moment. None of that here. Instead, they do this, and then it becomes a foundational moment for Shepard moving forward. It's one of the ones that you see referenced in every single game moving forward. It's the choice they always come back to, and I think it's a good way for them to kind of put a pin in it and say, this is one of the defining moments in Shepard's life. No matter how many lives they lead, this is always going to be a big moment for everyone who plays it, and we can do a lot of storytelling with it. I think it works out really, really well.
For sure. Yeah, and you know, the big decisions don't stop there. I mean, like we've said, Shepard has had a long, illustrious, and just honestly batshit career over the years, you know, literally dying and coming back to life as an agent for Cerberus, the shadowy, maybe human supremacist organization that is trying to unravel
just a wee bit
that are working in the shadows to unravel the Collector threat in Mass Effect 2. And toward the end of Mass Effect 2, Shepard is once again responsible for the lives of everyone on board a ship when they embark on this. They literally call it a suicide mission to the Collector base. You know, it's kind of made clear to you. You might not all make it back from this, but the stakes are so high that, you know, this is what we have to do. This is how it has to be. So going into this situation, you know, Shepard is once again finding themselves in the position of, I may be sending a lot of people to their deaths, but if we don't go, or if we go and we fail, that means more people, way more people than us, than just us, die. So the stakes are pretty high here. And, you know, we joked about maybe dying, resetting his or her mental clock, but like, is it just the fact that, you know, there's really no other option here? We have to, you know, go into this as well as we possibly can, or there is no daylight tomorrow for any of us. Does that kind of make this decision easier? Is it kind of a necessity thing? It's almost like, you know, it's so dire and so intense that you don't even have time or the mental bandwidth to be scared or nervous. You just got to go for it. Is that maybe what's happening here? Like, what do we think Shepard's attitude going into a suicide mission like this is?
I think for Shepard, it is just at the end of the day about, you know, it's the Reapers are a threat. And even if the universe isn't going to listen, like, I, Shepard, know that something has got to be done about it. And Shepard's going to have to work with whoever they can to get it done at the end of the day. And I think one of the things that has made Mass Effect 2 in particular stand out to me over the years is that whereas in 1 and 3, you're kind of recruiting this, you know, one, it's a scrappy young team of people who are out to do good. And in 3, it's, you know, largely just a greatest hits, a who's who of the series. Mm-hmm. And then also James Vega.
I was hoping someone would say something.
Yeah, look, James ain't the worst, but James,
he has an attitude that is very unbecoming of the hero of the universe. He's just like, you know, why do I have to trust you, Shepard? It's like, I've been doing this since before you were an adult. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Leave me alone, you child.
Imagine, like, the world's greatest band gets back together, and then they get an extra person on guitar, and that person has to show up and play with, I don't know, like, the Stones or the Beatles or something, and they're like, I'm the other guy. Like,
we have Prince, Paul McCartney,
James, you know,
and
he's
Kevin.
He's just trying to hold it down. But, you know, to my point, you know, that's 1 and 3, but you look at 2, and it's a mixture of people who either believe in some crazy ideal that would make them willing to walk into fire, or it's ragtag you know, rapscallions. It's a bunch of people that, you know, have no better reason. I mean, something that stuck out to us in our Norm DFM season on it was that every single one of their loyalty missions in Mass Effect 2 was like doing the one thing this person needed to do before they would be willing to walk yeah. into fire, you know? And ironically, it's what ends up being the thing that saves most of them from dying mm-hmm. in the suicide mission. But it's sort of this idea of them being willing to let go of their last inhibitions, kind of their things that are keeping them worried and concerned about what's going on outside that, so they can focus on the Collector mission. And that is the state they're going into it with, is they have to be able to operate and focus and save the darn universe and not be worried about, you know, what's going on back home. And that is kind of a haunting thing when you think about it, but it's something that makes that mission stick with me a lot.
Right. And I think, like, it is both a thing, like, they want this, you know, this closure on this one thing, but I also think for a lot of characters it gives them something to go back to, like something to fight to survive and see mm-hmm. on the other end. Mm-hmm. And to, like, bring it back to Shepard, like, again, like, this comes down to, like, this is a character that is, you as the player are basically writing their story as it's going on. And I wrote about once, like, my loyalty mission in Mass Effect was going to Horizon and seeing Kaden again and being like, okay, he doesn't trust me anymore, because fair, but also, like, that's what I'm fighting for when I'm fighting against the Collectors. That's what, like, that is what I'm, you know, if nothing else, I'm going to fight this fight to save him and to save the people that are around me that I care about. And so I honestly don't, we bring up Shepard's death a lot in Mass Effect 2, but I personally don't feel like that game specifically does enough to, like, really sit with the trauma of dying and being reborn. And a lot of that gets pushed into Mass Effect 3. Mm-hmm. And which is why I think, like, as a character, Shepard just feels, like, more fleshed out in 3 than ever. And whereas 2, like, they are the facilitator of everyone else's growth. And I think, you know, to some degree, you can view that as character building, because, like, that is the leader having to put their shit aside for everyone mm-hmm. else. And, you know, like, they are the one that does not die from not having a loyalty mission. They are the one that can only die if everyone else that they have brought with mm-hmm. them, you know, eats it. So, yeah, I think, you know, as far as what Shepard's, you know, baseline mindset, not adding all, like, you know, the role-playing elements of what a player might put in, I think it's just, like, they have to understand, like, this has to be done. And I think this, you know, that's probably, like, why they join up with Cerberus, or, like, willing to work with Cerberus, is that they're like, okay, I see that, like, I've gone to the council, they're not listening to me. Anderson does not have the power to, turn this in my favor, where the people that I thought would be behind me, you know, would be working with me. So, like, I have to deal with this, I guess we call it, like, the lesser evil of, like, you know, not doing anything at all, of, like, the lesser evil of inaction. So I think it's just, it is necessity at that point. Like, they understand more than anybody that this is a threat that a large swath of the population doesn't even believe exists.
And that's the thing about the, like, mission as a whole, though, too, is it's not just this, like, last mission, suicide mission, okay, cool, let's pick where character goes here, this one goes there, all right, cool. This is also right after doing those loyalty missions, if you do them, and you get to, like, also know these mm-hmm. characters even more with each mission. So it's not just, like, you know, in Mass Effect 1, we kind of get a backstory for these characters. We kind of understand who they are to a degree, but not, like, these loyalty missions. Like, these loyalty missions go really mm-hmm. in-depth. And you get to understand the psyche of this character and, you know, what they're going through and why they joined Cerberus and why they're really excited to be a part of your team specifically. They want to be with you. They love working with you because you're the one who gets shit done. And they have all these reasons and all these excuses for all the stuff that's going on. And it's not just a character anymore in a video game almost. It really fleshes them out. And you're like, holy shit, Morden, I don't know, man. I don't know if you want to go do that one thing in that little cramped area mm-hmm. over there. Mm-hmm. It gets a little hot there. You know, let's like, you really start caring about these characters. And I kind of wish the loyalty missions were even, like, further back in Mass Effect 1, or, like, you know, even in the beginning of Mass Effect 2, because it would have made, like, even the decisions I make throughout the whole game a little bit more thought-provoking mm-hmm. almost. But these loyalty missions completely change the last mission for you. Not just, obviously, for who survives and that kind of stuff, but it really changes how your outlook of that mission is. Because, I mean, like, if Morden dies, I don't know if you guys can tell, but I love Morden. If Morden dies, I'm upset. So it's just, it's just one of those things where you really take your time with a decision and want to, you want to do it, quote unquote, right. You want to do it so your whole crew is coming back with you, and it's champagne and a party afterward with giant collector base fireworks. Like, that's what you want, you know? So that's why I think this kind of mission, doing these loyalty missions, it's just one of those things that this mission is known so well throughout the Mass Effect player base that I think the loyalty missions are really the reason why, rather than just the mission.
Like, I have, like, one of my, like, key memories of playing the series for the first time was, like, being the first time I played the suicide mission, where I was literally shaking, like, worried about, like, trying to get everybody out alive. And I think that investment, like, only comes after you've seen all these characters, like, in, you know, they're at their lowest and at their highest after. And it does get into, like, I mean, broader feelings I have on the mission as sort of a, I would call it a misconstruing of, like, the thesis of the Mass Effect series, and that, like, it does have the true ending, the right choice, instead of, like, having to live with, like, the consequences of a decision, which is why, I think it, like, bleeds into discussions we have about the way that Mass Effect 3 happens, where, like, you don't get, you know, the everybody wins ending. Like, you don't, you aren't able to do the things you want and just have everybody get out scot-free. Like, things that you want to do are going to be mutually exclusive with the lives of other people. And so, like, it is, you know, I mean, as, like, you know, the standalone thing, like, you know, devoid of any other context, like, it does embody, like, that, the stress and the responsibility of, like, being in command of these people, because, like, you are, like, seeing the point A to B of how your decisions affect the lives of other people, and it's not doing any sort of, like, I mean, short of, like, loyalty mission, it's not doing any sort of, like, you know, looking at all these other decisions that you've made over the past games and kind of, like, funneling it into a specific moment where, like, certain things that you have done will open up certain possibilities. You were just straight up seeing, like, I sent the wrong person down that vent, and thus I have seen them die. And again, like, I don't think, like, in the midst of the suicide mission, I don't think Mass Effect 2 allows you to sit with that very long, because, like, you just have to keep going. Like, that is sort of, like, the drama of that. Like, for every person that falls, we have to keep going, because this is what we came here to do. We knew this might be a one-way trip. And, yeah, it's, like, it's that first time you play the suicide mission is, frankly, nothing like it.
Yeah.
I will say, you talked about, you know, the consequences of 2 carrying over into 3. I imagine those decisions are a lot easier when you just yeet your guys at the tasks like Zap Brannigan from Futurama. You show up in Mass Effect 3, it's like, what happened to your Suicide Squad? They did what they needed to do. They were a Suicide Squad.
Fulfilled their purpose.
But, yeah. Where's Tally? Good question. Where's Morden? Good question.
It is a good point, though, that in, you know, the age of playing video games online, that it's really hard to have those kinds of moments come across, though, because, I mean, it is our, I think, a lot of people's instinct to, if they know they could get a perfect ending out of something, they're going to look up how to do it. And I mean, that has, there are decisions throughout lots of older video games that have become now, oh, I know which one I'm going to choose because this will get me the best outcome. And yeah, yeah, you know, it's gamifying the actual choice that somebody wants you to sit down and have. But I'll say, even through all that, when I was playing it again for the Legendary Edition, when those came out, I knew exactly what choices I had to make to get everybody through, and I knew I bought all the right upgrades and I'd done all the loyalty missions, and even knew exactly how many missions I had between my crew getting abducted and having to go to the collector base to make sure, like, the fewest amount of them got liquefied. And even then, I'm watching these scenes as the Normandy is flying in and bullets are flying and ships are blowing up and everything's going crazy, and The part where you run for the door at the end always gets me, because I'm just terrified that I might have done something wrong and it will cost the life of one of these characters that I want to see make it through the other side. So even knowing the outcome, you're still like, it's a tense mission. Even if you are 100% sure you're right, you're never sure enough.
Exactly. Well, and it's funny you bring up the liquefied, because I remember my first playthrough, I didn't get there fast enough, and a bunch of them died. You know, the doctor comes out, and she just goes, "Don't worry, Commander. I'm sure you got here as quickly as you could." I may have made some side trips over to the Citadel once or twice.
Yeah, thinking about hanging out on the Citadel, playing that one gambling game they have in there.
Oh, Collector Base? I'll get around to it eventually. I'll get to it.
As far as you know, I got here as quick as I could.
I hustled, yeah.
All right, we're going to keep this conversation going, but first we're going to do some calibrations.
Moving on, though, to, you know, we've talked about Morden. You know, shout out Morden, the best boy, our main man Morden. You know, going into Mass Effect 3, we get another chance to, as Shepard, make a decision that's historic. It's a historic decision. It's not just a what am I going to put on my toast today decision. It's a this will have ripples throughout the galaxy decision. So the topic of curing the genophage has come up before. Even back in Mass Effect 1, we talked about, you know, Rex, you know, holding on to hope that it could be done someday. And Morden eventually cracks the code, like finds out how to do it. And Shepard is kind of trusted with the decision of, do we cure the genophage or not? And it's kind of like, that's a lot of pressure to put on someone, right? Because for background, for context, what makes this decision complicated is, you know, people have debated, well, if the Krogans aren't genetically, you know, crippled by the genophage, they'll just breed out of control and we'll have solar systems swarming with Krogan in no time. And it's kind of like, it's almost like deer. I live in Ohio and deer are all over the place. And so like, it's kind of like we literally need hunters to go and kill deer as much as they possibly can. Otherwise, we're just going to be crawling with deer all the time.
It's time for the Krogan hunt.
So it's like people, but on the other hand, it's like you can't just decide that other species aren't able to have children. It's kind of messed up, right? So yeah, like as Shepard, you're kind of given that option of like, well, what do you think? And it's kind of like, I'm just one dude. Who am I to make a call like this? So it's, yeah, it's, I think your friendship, your relationship with Morden at this point in the trilogy, kind of, it's like you're sharing the burden as Shepard a little bit, but it's also like, it still comes down to you. And again, that's a lot of pressure.
And too, the relationship with Morden also helps sell it too, because if you don't have a good relationship with Morden, you might not care to cure the genophage, because, you know, that's his whole thing. That's his whole identity, is finding a cure for this. But, like, you know, say for whatever reason you're a heartless monster who doesn't like Morden, and you don't, you know, do his loyalty missions, and you don't bond with him, you know, you don't visit him and ask him, and he, you know, when he asks you about your sex life, you don't acknowledge it or anything, you know? You just ignore all that stuff.
He's just looking out.
And, yeah, he's just looking out for you. Being a bro. You know? And then, so you might not be inclined to cure the genophage. You might be like, nah, man, let's keep this the way it is. The galaxy's better off without it. But if you like Morden, you're like, no, hell yeah, man, I'm going to help you out, buddy. This is your life's goal. Mm-hmm. Let's get it done. And you're definitely going to come down from that tower afterwards.
Look, Morden has a reason for asking about your sex life, okay? It's called Morden's Cure, okay? Get ready, all right? But no, seriously, the thing about Morden, too, is what really also affects this decision, because you're not just curing the genophage. It's like, all right, am I going to cure this thing? Oh, also, Morden, you going to die. Mm-hmm. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't want to lose my best friend. I don't want to lose this person that I love and care about. And, you know, I don't know all the Krogan, okay, guys? Like, but I know Morden. Like, that, it's one of those things. So you have to, there's this decision is not just to cure the whole species. It's also to cure a species and kill a friend. And, you know, in Morden's view, it's like, yeah, you know, Morden's life is nothing compared to being able to save the species that Morden cursed, if you will. And, you know, I think that is, again, that's one of those extra little things, that other layer that makes this decision even more difficult for you. And you're obviously going to be reminded about that. And There is a way to convince Morden to not, like, basically die, essentially, and that's to actually let Rex die in the first game. That is the only way where Morden can essentially survive, is if you do that. And 'cause no matter what,
Morden well, will.
Even then, it's like a super complicated. I once looked into it. I was like, is there any way? And it's
very difficult.
Very difficult. And there's not even much of a payoff afterwards because he doesn't join you. He like goes away and it's like you get a voicemail of him in the Bahamas being like, oh, hey, man, what's going on? Things are pretty cool here.
He disappears himself.
Yeah, because I mean, if anyone ever found out like what actually happened to make that come about, it'd be a bad time for everybody. And
exactly,
I think an important thing to like lay out for this decision too is that it's a, you know, when you meet Morden the first time, Morden's adamant that he did the right thing in the Genophage restoration project, that he did the right thing by. I think he did not, Ken, correct me if I'm wrong on this, he did not work on the original Genophage, but he...
worked on modification?
Yeah, he updated it to make sure because Krogan were naturally starting to heal from it. So he is adamant that he made the right decision, he made the right call, he was maintaining the sanctity of the universe. And throughout the course of Mass Effect 2, one of the things you start to deal with as you deal with his assistant Malin and the things you find out there is... he kind of has to start to grapple with what he did and also the human effect it has had. I mean, humans, you know, it's just a functional word for us. It doesn't really apply in Krogan terms, but the, let's say the personal toll it took on individual people in this universe. And when you come to in Mass Effect 3, Morden has made a choice and it's, you know, for once Shepard's not the one making choices in the universe. Right. Morden has chosen that he needs to make amends. He needs to make this right. And so you're not necessarily being given the choice of yes or no. Do I, you know, cure the Genophage or leave it? Your choice is, do I stop Morden or let it happen? Mm-hmm. And I think that twist is really what makes it hurt the more because.
Oh,
if you're going to step in there and do it, that means you're not just stopping Morden, sometimes lethally stopping Morden if you take that route.
Yes.
But now you are making it like concerted effort to undo the thing that Morden has chosen to do in this universe. And I think that's what ends up making Morden such a compelling character for everyone, myself included, is this is a character who makes a choice, who does their own thing in the universe. And once again, we're back on Vermeer, baby. We're making tough choices and you're going to have to stand up to your beliefs and do what you believe in. And that might not always match up with Morden. Ken, you had something you want to say?
Well, I was just thinking, like, it's interesting to frame, to me, it's interesting to frame the Shushanka decision as a difficult decision because it is, like you're saying, it is a moment of the making the decision of inaction as opposed to doing something. And because, like, you know, the entire premise of, like, Shepard's role in, especially in that, like, first chapter or so, or act, whatever you want to call it, of Mass Effect 3 is facilitating connections between other people. And it's basically, like, you make the decision to either help these people do what they're here to accomplish or meddle. And so, for me, like, Mass Effect 3 is, in a lot of places, is me recognizing when it is not my place as Shepard to involve myself in some of these decisions. And I think, you know, that's growth, I guess. I, you know, I destroyed a cure on Vermeer, but I did not interfere with what these people were trying to do. And so in that way, like, it's not a really hard decision. Like, it sucks to lose Morden. And I, but then, you know, you recognize this is how it has to be. And that is, again, like, one of the things that why I love Mass Effect 3 and its sort of like depiction of the player's impact on the world is that it does not always, you know, end up in like the shiniest, happiest version of all this where everyone gets to, you know, cheer the Genophage and then go home then. And I just enjoyed that it was about me, again, like trying, like projecting my views through Shepard into the world and just allowing something to happen because I thought it was right, because I thought it wasn't my place to stop it. And
you were the side character in someone else's story because he had to do it.
And that's,
someone else would have gotten it wrong.
And also the thing about Morden, you know, possibly surviving, you know, even if you won't have that decision available, the game like hints at it and it makes you think you might be able to save him. And like, it kind of makes the choice like an illusion, if that makes sense to you. And I mean, that hurts even more. But yeah, it's a, and then you kind of start thinking like, oh, well, my choices don't really mean anything because I'm just gonna, you know,
it's just what's going to happen is predetermined, or what's going to happen is going to happen. And then, like, all of a sudden you start questioning, you're like, wait, oh my God, what could I have done? What could I have done? And there was nothing you could have done unless it was, like, literal years ago.
Right.
And you're like, holy shit.
Well, the choice you get to make is let your friend go and do the thing he wants to go do, right? It's right. To not put your hand on the wheel.
Right.
Exactly.
And we're spending a lot of time talking about Morden, but, like, there are ramifications for, like, if, let's say, you sabotaged it, but Rex is still alive. So, like, you've killed Morden.
Oh, man, that
and then
sucks.
Rex shows up on the Citadel, has found out what you've done, is about to kill you for what you've done, and as, you know, you finally get into this last firefight with the person who was your friend, who trusted you wholeheartedly with the future of his people, he just says, I'm pulling all the Krogan spore out for the war. Fuck you. Can I say
that? Yeah, that's fine.
I probably swore since we've gotten on. I don't know if I was allowed to say that.
You're
okay.
Allowed.
You can fucking swear. It's
and
fucking
so,
fine.
You know, it's one of those things where, like, you, through your meddling, have ultimately undermined yourself. Because, like, the sort of, you know, the framing is like, oh, if you do this, if you... You know, there are the larger ramifications, like, what the threat of the Krogan is, but also, like, you know, the more immediate payoff you get is that you'll have more Salarian support. Mm-hmm. And you've done this, and you've killed one friend, and you're about to kill the other. The entire Krogan forces are being pulled out, and you're not going to have that support in the war. But you got these Salarians, I guess. So,
bunch of nerds and spaceships.
Yeah.
Played yourself.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about illusion of choice, let's talk about the last final decision.
Oh boy. We've worked our way up to
OG,
the main course.
Not new one,
and
OG.
By main course, I mean three different pizzas. They're the exact same pizza, but they're different colors.
Are they?
I like.
Are they?
I like red food coloring on mine.
It's okay, Ken. We do this everywhere we go.
I guess.
In all seriousness, though, the Mass Effect trilogy does come down to a penultimate decision at the end of Mass Effect 3, where the player, as Commander Shepard, is kind of faced with, you know, a way to deal with the Reaper threat, you know, the Reapers, in case, for the uninitiated, basically an army of robots that destroy all life in the galaxy every few thousand years or so, and they're back with a vengeance.
They are not cash money.
They are not cash money at all. They are... not groovy to chill with at all. And there are three ways to address the problem. You can either blow them all up, just destroy all of them, assume control of them, or kind of combine them with all sentient life. There's destroy, control, and synthesize. Those are the three options. But the thing is, correct me if I'm wrong here, fellas, but I'm pretty sure that no matter what Shepard chooses, they basically give their life in the process. In almost all of them, correct? So it's kind of like, no matter what, it's a self...
In a way.
It's a sacrificial decision.
What happens in Mass Effect. But, there is like a post-credits hint with the destroy ending if you have high enough galaxy score.
Right.
That you kind of see some rubble move. You know, it's not exactly the hand coming up from the dirt, but, you know, it's something.
They breathe,
but, you know, it takes more than one breath to move that hard is all I got to say.
I do want to, before we move on, there is, like, one caveat to these choices. The destroy ending also will destroy the rest of synthetic life, which includes the Geth.
Yep.
That's
it
correct.
It kills all the Geth.
And Edie, a part member.
No, you're right, yeah.
Which is crazy, because that stuff is thrown in as, like, an extra afterthought. Like, it's just a casual mention from the AI. He's just like, oh, yeah, by the way. You're gonna kill an entire civilization as well as
it's like a mass EMP.
Right, you know,
if you're gonna take out one thing, you know, I think they make a point at something to say like this is not a precision instrument. This is something that is going to affect change on a universal scale. We could not exactly tune this to do exactly what you wanted it to do. So it's gonna be a bit more of a blunt object than
a scalpel.
Object.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully the Geth have a backup. but yeah, these decisions, it does feel cheap to a degree. However, there are more decisions that pop up depending on what you do throughout the games, which is nice because you can also walk away and just go fuck you. And like there's a couple of other options, if you will, but I think this decision, no matter what you already know, you're probably going to die. And I think that makes the decision a little less
at least in the OG 3, it makes your decision a little less like, you know, how can I live through this? You know, it's like, nah, all right, I'm going to die. What am I going to do? It really makes it so it's like all hands on deck. What decision do you want to do? Like this, it's, you know, it's not the end of the world for anybody else but you. So what's your decision? And it makes it, I don't want to say a little easier, but yeah. You know.
You will die, which is sad, but on the bright side, you won't have to watch Mass Effect Andromeda.
Hi-yo! Well,
hold on. I did right. enjoy Andromeda.
I'm just kidding.
I didn't finish it, but I did.
I think one of the more interesting things about the endings here is that it really asks you to walk the talk of what you've done
yes.
up to this point. And I do think it's interesting, you know, you have these three options that you have, and I think a lot of people look at them and say, well, you know, if they all kind of end the same way, then, you know, what does it matter? Because Mass Effect 3 ends and then there's nothing after that. But the point of Mass Effect was never really to just keep going ad infinitum. You know, it's more, you get this final note to say, how is Shepard going to go out? And what did Shepard believe in enough to be willing to go out on it? So
what are you willing to die for?
Yes, yeah. Yes. And it is a moment of like, you know, am I going to destroy the Reapers? Like I said, I was going to do from the very beginning. Or I think control is actually one of the more interesting options because you are kind of teased about it throughout the game by seeing the elusive man and seeing what's been happening to him as he tried to exert control. And to be honest, it's not that different from what Shepard does in the universe, trying to exert their own control, trying to make all these decisions and make these things happen. And is, you know, does Shepard feel like they are able to play megalomaniac in that way, able to control everything in the universe to make it perfect, or is that going to be a fatal flaw like it was for the elusive man? Or you have synthesize where you say, okay, I'm going to make this sweeping change and just force everybody to love each other, but that's really taking the choice away from them at the end of the day. That's forced unification of synthetics and organics, and, you know, not just problems of consent being applied there, but also problems of, does shoving everybody together in the same room forcibly really fix the core issue at the end of the day? And
now you two stay in that room and you don't come out until you're friends again.
Everybody in the Milky Way, you're all shoved in here together, and you're also all these weird synthetic organic protomolecule hybrids, who knows? And you just got
all going through robo puberty now. All get along,
y'all just all gotta get along now. And I think it's interesting that you're being given this choice and then no more choices after that. You just you have one last thing to say. I'm going to try and spin this universe in the right direction, and I hope it turns out all right. That's that's poignant to me. That's interesting to me, and also maybe a reason why you got to wonder what they're going to do with Mass Effect 5. But it is, I think, you have to make this decision and just hope that it's going to turn out okay, and that's kind of compelling in its own way.
Yeah, I think that's been large, like even we are coming up on 10 years since this game came out, since, you know, the Mass Effect 3 ending controversy psychically damaged me for the rest of my life. But that is, as you know, especially like, as it comes back to like the weight of responsibility, that was, which is, you know, the thesis of what we're talking about, like it is, like I said, like it is you choosing what you're willing to die for, like the note that you're willing to, like even if Shepard does not die, like you do this with the intention of assuming that you were going to die. And it is like I was saying, like, you know, it's that last note that you're willing to like put this stamp on this universe of like, I was here and this is what I believed and this is the note I was willing to leave everything on. And I think like my sort of feeling is that a lot of people are not used to video games not, you know, giving you the gold star and telling you this was the right thing. Like, and I think that comes into like some of the controversy around this ending, is that like people aren't used to like internalizing why they do things in video games. And I think that is What was so compelling to me about it all those years ago was that, like, I, you know, as I said at the beginning, it's like, I played a very, like, hardened renegade Shepard, and he, you know, was doing things, like, you know, with, like, a hint of selfishness, but also, like, a hint of efficiency in, like, what he wanted to do and why he did things. Like, I did end up picking the destroy ending, and knowing that that was, you know, that was the renegade option, that it was going to destroy an ally force, that it was going to destroy a friend in Edie, I still knew the Reapers were going to be gone. And even if, like, that was a future I was willing to die for.
Yeah.
More so than I was, like, you know, the idea of, like, becoming, you know, this, the new catalyst, as it were, to control the Reapers, or, like, you know, wiping away a lot of what makes, you know, the Mass Effect universe unique in terms of, like, all these people have come from, like, different backgrounds, they have different cultures, they have different ways of being, and, like, synthesis is kind of this, you know, homogenization of everyone, and, you know, that's, and, you know, that's just my reading on it, and, like, a lot of people have, like, very different readings on, like, all of these choices. Like, I see, you know, these negatives and control and synthesis where a lot of people that pick those endings are like, no, but I did this because, like, you know, control is the ending where Shepard alone is sacrificed and is able to just pull the Reapers away and, you know, guard the galaxy, as it were, with, you know, this amazing, you know, synthetic force. Where I think that's kind of, like, the beauty of Mass Effect 3 is that everyone, like, you know, in a world where, you know, people were not so angry about it all the time, like, is that it, like, it allows, like, because it ends the way it did, and, you know, especially, like, in the original and before they put the extended cut out, like, and it just kind of, like, you make that decision, then it cuts to black, the credits start, and, like, you just kind of have to live with that. You're never gonna know if it all, you know, turned out the way that you wanted it to, and, you know, you just gotta carry that weight. You gotta be, like, willing to, you know, stick by what you did and why you did it. And the game does not have to, like, give you a trophy for that. Like, you can, like, it is perfectly fine for you to have to just live with what you did and hope that it was right.
I'm gonna go on a little bit of a tangent, but there's, is anybody here seen the old Red versus Blue on YouTube? There's a poignant point that the character Church said where he goes, you know, when the hero makes the valiant sacrifice to save the day, he doesn't know if it actually works. You know, he doesn't know if the good guys triumphed over evil because he's gone. And I kind of liked that ending for Mass Effect where it was like, nope, that's it. Your Shepard's story is done. You have no idea if this is a good thing, if this is a bad thing, if this was an okay thing. Like, you have made your choice and your character is dead and gone.
The universe is going to keep on moving. Like, it's almost that moment of, like, what makes you think you're that special that you get to, like, outlive everything? No, Shepard is going to have a finite time in this universe, and you get this one chance to leave your mark on it before you go. So what are you going to do? And you know, harken all the way back to what we were talking about with Rex and Vermeier and having to, like, really assert yourself as not just making a choice for an outcome that you want, but being able to defend it, being able to reason out why you make it. And that's what Mass Effect 3 did. What by just removing any other choice after it and leaving the question mark in the air, it's going, well, how did you justify that? And I, you know, there are people who will say that they picked destroy and a certain ending just because, oh, because I wanted Shepard to live. And sure, you know, that's, selfishness is as much a reason as anything else in this world, but I do think it then, you know, forces you to ask some questions of yourself. Why do I make these choices? What does my Shepard believe in? And I think that's the hallmark of a good role-playing game right there.
Absolutely.
And I think also with this specific game and its decisions for the end, when, like you guys said, it's your decision and you process your, like, last decision because of the way you played the game and because of who you are as well. And, like, I think that, you know, when you look at the destroy, like, honestly, I saw every decision as not really mine to make besides the destroy, because what has everybody been doing? They are under the impression, and they are all, the universe, whatever, the galaxy is in agreement that we are going to destroy the Reapers together. So, ultimately, that is your decision. That is everybody's decision. But now, we're presented with these other options, and we're presented with a way that, yes, you can control them. You can let everybody not be destroyed, but also you gain that collective knowledge of every single cycle, and you can share that, if you will, with the rest of the galaxy, and then protect the galaxy from outlying threats that are maybe possibly similar to the Reapers from another galaxy. You have, then that's another option, and then you have your synthesize option, your Transformers Beast Machines option, which I was a fan of because it was literally the ending to the Transformers universe, and I thought it was really cool, so I was like, I'm gonna choose that. But that option is, you know, the cycle possibly could continue, even if I destroy the Reapers, and the cycle could continue where now the Geth might, you know, show up again. We might, they might have a backup somewhere, or something may happen that I don't know about, that another AI could show up, and then they could become a Reaper-style situation again, and oh, shit, now it's happening again. You don't, like, you don't know, and that's the whole other thing about the ending of the game, is you don't know. Every, you make this decision, and you just don't know what's going to happen, because you're fucking dead. Like, your character is you, and you're fucking dead. So you don't know what's going to happen. So it's like, hey, guess what? Not only are you going to die, so that should make this decision a little bit easier for you, but guess what? You're not going to know what's going to happen after. I can just, this catalyst is just telling me what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, okay, Deus Ex Machina, just tell me what's going to happen. Oh, sure. Yeah. But I don't know mm-hmm. that. And this is really dumb, but I think about how everybody loves their decision at the end of this game series so far. This decision, and everybody really like holds their decision really mm-hmm. close mm-hmm. to their heart. Like, it's just one of those things where it's like, at least your first playthrough decision, you're like, no, that was my decision, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I did that. And this is the dumbest quote, but I really think about it. For all the Rick and Morty people out there, I think of Doofus Rick's quote where he talks to Jerry about like those coins, those like R2-D2 coins, where he's like, I'm not going to tell you that these coins will increase in value or even hold their current value. The truth is, you bought them because you like them. They have value to you, and that's what matters. And that's the thing about mm-hmm. this ending is, that's your ending, that's your decision, and it has value because it's mm-hmm. you. And I think that, I just think that this decision ultimately is a lot more impactful than people mm-hmm. think. You'll have people who don't think it's impactful, and they're like, it was shit, da, 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 da. But then you ask them what ending they chose, and they're like, swear by that ending, and like, that's their thing. So yeah, I think, you know, the PTSD resulting from everything that Shepard kind of went through is like, yeah, it goes to absolutely. Us as well.
I read a book once. It was a part of the Horus Heresy series, if that rings any bells with anyone. That's a deep cut. But someone says, don't fuss too much over making the right decision. All you got to do is make a good decision, see it through, and accept the consequences. And I think, you know, we've touched on a lot of that. It's, when you're in a position that Shepard's in, you know, you just... you make the best call that you can with what you know at the time. And we talked about like, oh, you don't know what the long-term consequences will be. You just know what you know, and you have to go off of that. And when you're going down a one-way street and you know you probably aren't going to come back from it, that gives you such clarity. And I think maybe the pressures of leadership, the pressures of trauma, they kind of fade into the background when you just face the facts of, here's what's in front of me, here's what I have to deal with. And that really translates to the player experience too. Like, the player has to deal with all that too. And I think that's a beautiful thing. But
I mean, there's something that just, I think, came to define a console generation and lay a lot of ground moving forward, to the point that, I mean, we saw games like Assassin's Creed Odyssey and stuff like that start to incorporate choice-based dialogue and incorporate this idea of quest having branching narrative, which, to be fair, was not exactly a wholly original thing for BioWare to do in the first place. I mean, they were doing it before Mass Effect came around, and there were other games doing it before then too, but the idea,
Oregon Trail,
yeah like the classic, you know, destroy, control, or synthesize at the end of Oregon Trail. But this whole idea of having things carry over and having weight, you know, nobody's really ever done it like Mass Effect has in terms of game over game. And I think a lot of people always get really hung up on, you know, oh, did my choices matter? You know, how much did my choices matter? Quantify how much my choices matter right. in this game.
Give me a score.
I do, you know, I'll be the first to admit that there were like at least a couple places where I think things panned out weird, and that is just the troubles of making video games, is that you can have grand aspirations and then your designer spent a lot of time making Rachni models, and it would suck if they didn't get to show them off to every single player. So there are circumstances that come up, but I think one of the more important things that Mass Effect can show is just how choosing choices can shape your own experience with the game. Ken actually used this in a headline once. I believe it was how shaping Shepard shaped me or something like that. did you have to make it a tongue tire like this?
I didn't anticipate people would be saying it out loud. Yeah. I thought they'd be reading it.
So. Yeah, no, this was the long con that Ken just played on me to get me to goof this on a podcast. But I think a role-playing game succeeds when it makes you have to really embody a character and understand why you're making choices in that character. And like we've been talking about, you know, make difficult decisions as that character and then live with them and have them become formative pillars. And that's really how Mass Effect sticks out to me over the years, is you have this idea of creating a character that is initially just someone showing up on a screen that is, okay, this is my avatar, I guess. But by the end of Mass Effect 3, your Shepard is making a decision that you have to live with, because Shepard ain't going to live with it. You're the one that's got to live with it afterwards. And you got to think about it for years to come. And I think the legacy of Mass Effect has shown that it worked out for the better.
Yep, they were still thinking about it 10 years on.
Hell yeah, mm-hmm. That's true. Well, this has been an absolute delight. It's been a genuine pleasure having you guys hanging out with us with this discussion. It's been a great time. I want to thank you both again for coming on to Lore Party. How do the good folks out there find more of you if they want to hear more of you? Where do you live at? What's your home base? Home address, shoe size. Yeah.
What's going on? Are you the ESA? Is that what this is? That's a deep cut for y'all. You can find me at CMoosi. That's SEAMOOSI on the socials. I am on Normandy FM, a bi-weekly retrospective podcast. We're still getting used to that schedule. Currently playing through Final Fantasy X and X-2. And soon our impending Cyberpunk season.
Nice.
I'm also over at Axe of the Blood God, and you can also find me writing at my day job, Destructoid. Nice. Ken.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at ShepherdCDR, like Shepherd Commander. My day job is I write over at Fanbyte, and I'm also on some other podcasts every now and then. But yeah, like Eric said, Normandy FM was like, if you like what we were doing here, there are 51 episodes of an entire Mass Effect retrospective. They went beat by beat through the first four games, and we did a bunch of other Mass Effect stuff too. Like, we did those roundtables for Legendary Edition. Yeah. We have a periodic news show about BioWare called BioBits. Mm-hmm. So, like, if there's a development in Mass Effect, we take time out of our busy schedules to talk about it. So, you can. I mean, I'm always talking about Mass Effect anyway. Like, I have no reason to, but I'm still doing it.
Yeah, we just do this. This is just, you know, it's nice that we get to put it on a podcast and monetize it every now and then, but this is what we do anyways.
Well, guys, that about wraps it up. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, please take a second to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us grow the show. And be sure to connect with us on Twitch, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter at lore_party. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.